everybody. Good evening and welcome back to another conversation with Alana Mercer. Alana's books can be found over on Amazon, Into the Cannibal's Pot, highly recommended. Trump Revolution, also really good. And the one I'm currently reading, Broadsides, which is a really good compilation of Alana's thoughts. And of course, you can find Alana on www.alanamercer.com and also birdieablog.com. Really good places to go to get Alana's up-to-date writings. You can also find her on Parler, on Gab, and I think, oh, you're not on Facebook, Alana. So anyway, come on to the stream and join. Come on to the show and join us, Alana Mercer.
Hi, David. Thank you for that gracious introduction.
No, you're very welcome. It's a real pleasure to spend this time with you, Alana, trying to make sense of what frequently seems to me an increasingly bizarre world. And I think it's really good if we can try and help people make sense of some aspects of it anyway. I don't think there's enough time in the world to sort it all out, but at least maybe there's some things we can kind of put straight. So thanks for joining us. We've got a really interesting topic this evening. And you know, we have talked about this on previous episodes where we have tackled some of the things that people say, and are they what they mean, or are they just accidental, or are they just misspeaking? And that really brings up a particular thing that happened a couple of days ago. Can we bring up, Jed, please, the on-screen grab of the comments of, well, bring up the what you've got there sitting, Jed. Okay. You lost me at psychiatrist. A psychiatrist invited to Yale spoke of her fantasies of shooting white people. Oh my. And I'm sure you've seen the story, Alana. So this is Yale University School of Medicine, which I would have thought was pretty, pretty prestigious. I don't know, but you can tell me. And her talk, which is amazing, Alana. I mean, this is just so incredible. Her online talk was titled "The Psychopathic Problem of the White Mind." And even more bizarre down the rabbit hole, it was presented by the School of Medicine's Child Study Center. So she gave this speech, or she was going to give this lecture, and in it, and this is the bit, she talks about some bizarre fantasy she seems to have. Jed, can we bring up the next, just clip to the next, the screenshot, please, of... what she said. Yes, here we go. Dr. Aruna Kilanani, very appropriately named lady, Alana. So here she is, Dr. Aruna. There's all kinds of fantasies. I'm sure viewers and listeners will be able to see this. It's in the link below as well. So these are her fantasies. Alana, first off, what's your first reaction when you saw this story?
Well, I think that you and I have been covering these issues. We've been going in depth and deconstructing critical race theory and how it is infesting. We haven't called it critical race theory or socialism or Marxism. We have called it anti-whitism, systemic anti-whitism. And I think people who watch our discussions will be very well anchored to deal with this woman's very common sentiments. This is not an outlier, is it?
No.
And I think in my blog post on the topic, one of the categories that I've filed it under is terrorism, because she she seeks to practice to terrorize whites or practice terrorism on whites. And just as you were hinting at in your intro, I would anchor people not so much, and I'm sure Fox News will be waxing about how terrible this woman is, how emblematic she is of a system. You mentioned the Ivy League. This is not uncommon in that shithole called Yale. institutions that were the pride of America.
Yeah.
And so we have to, David, direct our ire and our anger at the proper repository, namely the authorities. And as I mentioned in my blog post, someone invited the scum of the earth, and I don't think I'm understating it. This is an awful individual, a horrible human being who wants to murder innocent individuals because of the color of their skin. And moreover, not only because of the color of the skin, because of what that color represents, the symbolism of it, not because those people who are pigmentally challenged have done anything to this woman or to her kin or to anyone she knows, but for the symbolism of this. This is how evil this commonly enforced now and pervasive way of thinking, I'm not even going to call it an ideology, is percolating throughout American institutions and even exported to you. And so someone invited her, this person, knowing full well what she stood for, and not only someone, Yale University, someone in authority saw the title of her lecture and approved it. Yeah. A system wholly designed to marginalize very fine and good people who could be ministering to a psychiatric population, to the vulnerable segment of the population, much better than she could. Someone chose to put this woman through a very rigorous, program, medicine and psychiatry. So that's where we have to focus.
Absolutely right. As usual, the legacy commentariat, they miss the point. They always do, Alana. And it's not just what she said, which is horrific, obviously, but it's the fact, and this is the way things work at universities and other such institutions. You know, you just don't rock up and give a lecture. Things are considered, things are filtered, things are reviewed, things are approved. And people do that. And as you were so shrewd to point out at the time, Alana, you know, who approved this? Why are they still in employment? Why haven't they been sacked? Because if this was any other, if the skin pigmentations were reversed, let's put it like that, in a different way, that person would not see their feet would not touch the ground on the way out the door. And yet, here's the thing, Jed, bring up the next... This was in the Daily Mail, which is quite good, Alana, as a source.
Yes.
Jed, if you could just bring up, So now this same person, Dr. Aruna, says, well, guess what? She's a victim. Yeah, she's a victim because it was taken out of context, but she stands by her work. After, and this is another bit that bothered me, backlash over deeply worrisome views. Oh, hang on a second. I would call it a lot more than that. I mean, you know, Dr. Aruna does say, Alana, she doesn't regret the word choice of her lecture.
Yeah. Now, this tells us very, very clearly, and I think we always have to do the meta-analysis and see what... Yeah. First of all, she's not an outlier. People like her are infesting, and the best of institutions are festooned with people like her who think like that. And secondly, she is telling you very plainly, and you ought to believe her, that she does not regret. There's a context to her awful murderous impulses, and the context is very justified. And why shouldn't she believe this? She has been affirmed at every single step of the way throughout her career. She's been told these things about the oppressor group, and she's been sanctioned in these sentiments. And you and I have been talking a lot. Who are the vulnerable, the subset of the population that this woman treats? Her license has not been revoked. She has license to ply her profession on very vulnerable people. And, she's coming from a place of strength. This is institutionalized. So I often use the term the progressive left. I think even that diminishes what's going on here.
Yes.
They control the intellectual means of production. We have in Marxism, we talk about the economic means of production centralized and controlled by state. Here, intellectual means of production are controlled by people like her, and her views have been fully affirmed. So she's right. She's correct. She's acting within a context. Within a context that allows her these sentiments against an imperialist force, a white people who have symbolized the worst of humanity, and this is what's being taught in the schools. So she's absolutely right to stand by her words.
Alana, you know, you're right. She's not an outlier at all. I saw a couple of other professors. I'm going to just bring them up now, so we can just see their thoughts. Again, American professors. If we can bring up the first one, please. This is Professor Mary Kay Ann Struther, and she's got her pronouns and everything. And she says, and these are her words, so it's not me speaking, for whites to truly understand the struggle and pain of non-white people, they should be made to go to a mandatory slave camp for 1 year at 18 years. Their masters would be non-white and treat them exactly as the slaves were treated. That is the only way to unify. And then, Alana, just the last one, just bring up the next one, the final one. This absolute lunatic, Jennifer Ho, which is a very appropriate name, I think, Professor of Ethnic Studies and Critical Race Theories at University of Colorado Boulder. She reckons that white supremacy doesn't require a white person to perpetuate it. And she's gone on to talk about white supremacy is the root of all race-related violence in the U.S., even though black people are attacking Asian Americans. So, Alana, to your point, Dr. Aruna is not an outlier. She's mainstream.
Yeah. And it's interesting that, in my book, Into the Cannibals part, I point out that the causation that's often pointed out is, even though most of the criminal class in South Africa was born after 1994, after freedom, the rationale for it is precisely what this woman is saying, apartheid. The system created them. They are violent because of apartheid. And these people were born into so-called freedom, have no idea what apartheid is, and apparently a system, and that's the irrational thing, and that's what you and I have been deconstructing in these conversations. A system made me do that. It is an illogic and an irrationality. A system doesn't make anyone do it. One's deeds, one's insufficiencies, one's impulses, that's what makes a person create crime, do the crime, especially, in particular in South Africa. And these women are, it's interesting, the one is an Asian lady. What she's saying is, don't blame African Americans, who, as we see in the videos, are the ones punching the lights out of elderly Asians and just anyone walking while Asian. It's not a white crime. But even those African Americans, she's saying they should blame whites for the crime. And so these very primitive, atavistic, stupid people are not only highly qualified and highly esteemed and well ensconced in what I call the intellectual means of production throughout society, whether it's state or civil society. What she says comes with quite a bit of authoritative heft. What she says carries weight.
And that's why, Alana, if we then take what these academics have been saying, and if we then, Jed, bring up Alana's column, which I think the one I'm looking at, Alana, this one, once we bring it up, from 2017, but I know that there's one precedes that as well. But I mean, talk about prophetic, talk about this is just the and this is obviously relating to South Africa in the first instance. But as we've talked about, we have to go way beyond South Africa. This is kind of almost universal now, and certainly in the West.
Yeah, and this column, once again, I have my context too, ladies. So this column was published in 2007. It's verbatim, except for the lead, it's verbatim out of Into the Cannibal's Pot. Nobody was ready to hear this in 2017, David. And when it was verbatim published in 2011 out of Into the Cannibal's Pot, Why Hatred of Whites is Here to Stay, nobody was ready to hear it or publish it. I was published by an obscure, courageous publisher out of Washington State. And I also gave a lecture in the most conservative university in the country, Texas A&M, a wonderful place. I had wonderful hosts, and I gave the same lecture, Why Hatreds of Whites is Here to Stay. And the audience, much of which was liberal, was ready to pelt me for these things. So let us hope, after all that background, that someone's finally ready to hear what we have to say about why this is happening. And perhaps, you know, something from what Dr. Kilnani said, Fox News actually brought up her latest rant, and that was, she said something. She's not undeterred. She hissed, this cobra head hissed, that get it together, white girls. There is a reason people hate you. And my quip in the update to my blog was this: I agree. It's called the green-eyed monster, or envy for the illiterate. And that segues into the piece I wrote, Why Hatred of Whites is Here to Stay.
If we can go towards the end of the column, Rebecca, Jed, if you can bring it back up again, because I thought this was a really apposite. We just scrolled down a little bit.
I think it starts the physical existential vulnerability of white South Africans. That's the paragraph. The physical existential vulnerability, a little bit up.
I think we need to go up a little bit. We're flying through a very.
There we go. Yeah. It's complicated, and of course, I cited a very interesting historian who explained that in the Cape Times. I recall. Yes, I cite my sources, the vulnerability of the white minority on the continent, on the African continent, and it's the same parallel I drew in my book to the U.S. is rooted in their very achievements on those continents. And of course, I explain that the white minority in South Africa ceded control over the state apparatus for the guarantee, an abstract guarantee of constitutional safeguards inherent in a liberal democracy. That's all they got for giving up, let's say, without defeat. The apartheid regime was not defeated. They were pressured, but they were not defeated. But without defeat, they gave up control of the state apparatus for a promise of a constitutional liberal democracy that would unite people across racial lines. And of course, what happened was that this was an optimistic assumption, because whites imagined that blacks would also make the same sacrifice and relinquish race and tribe, all those things that neoconservatives say do not matter, relinquish those affinities, the great British thinker Edmund Burke called the little platoon, our affinity to our little platoons, would relinquish that for this promise of democracy, right? So they surrendered without defeat and were in a place of extreme vulnerability, precisely because of hatred that is here to stay, because of their achievements on the continent. Achievements, the people who settled South Africa, as similarly here in America, the people who settled were you know, British and Dutch settlers in the case of South Africa, and the people who are dismantling South Africa simply did not have the same achievements on the continent as the people they are trying to destroy. So it's very, and in fact, I used the observation of an African-American journalist by the name of Keith Richburg. He used to be, I mentioned him last time when I spoke about the Tutsis and the Hutus and their, yeah, and their conflict there. And he wrote a marvelous book, and I cite him extensively in Into the Cannibals Pot as to why this murderous massacre happened between in Rwanda, what we call the Rwanda genocide, and in 1994. You won't see Keith Richburg on MSNBC or CNN or even on Fox News. And maybe he even regrets what he said. But he explains it as pure envy. The continent, the African continent, it moves. The fulcrum is envy. And he explained it. He says, this is a quote from his book, an African-American liberal journalist slashing at their own perceived ugliness. That's what the Hutus were doing to the Tutsis, as if destroying this thing of beauty, this thing they could never attain, removing it from earth forever. It was quite a poignant and magnificent example, and this is what I, you know, it's unavoidable. It's the issue is envy.
And the thing is that in your article, Alana, you then draw the fact that what's that happened in South Africa, the same thing is happening in, well, the West, but certainly in America. It seems to be getting a real momentum. Because the analogies, the comparisons are so obvious, and they're visceral. They are literally happening in front of our eyes. I mean, that's why I think everyone should buy your book. Every American who cares about America, if not South Africa, should read your book, because it's things are following a similar trajectory, are they not?
Yeah, and look, so the reason apparently is for the sins of apartheid. In South Africa, this is the people like the academics that you've just shown will say it's for the sins of apartheid, and there has been this excuse making for an ethnocide against rural and white South Africans. It has been finessed, saying that this is happening because of the sins of apartheid. And similarly, what we're seeing here is that it's the same etiology, the same causation, and for the sins of slavery. American, Anglo-American whites are suffering from this, are the object of this racial enmity and hate. So, yeah, the parallels are similarly the settlement in the 1600s, follows a very similar trajectory. So, yes, I would say that's the whole point of that book, was to draw the parallels and to warn Americans this is coming. And, of course, I always hark back to the responses that I got from publishers when I presented this, I guess, 11 years ahead of time was, the Chinese Olympics are coming up. That's far more crucial, you know. Or, someone said to me at the time, there was a very salacious book that was making the rounds among publishers about a woman who had voluntarily said, become the wife of an African chief. And they said, if you have something going on similar, you know, if you had any such inclinations, we would want to publish you or something a little bit more personal and salacious. So nobody wanted to listen at the time I published Cannibal.
But the thing is just because people don't want to hear things doesn't mean that things aren't true and don't become even more true with every passing day. And so that's why when I seen Dr. Aruna's fantasies, and I saw it like you, Alana, she has kind of almost mainstream in the US in 2021, and she's fantasizing in the most horrible, as you say, and murderous way, And it is kind of she wants to terrorize a whole ethnicity. This is incredible that this can be happening, I think. But
and I think she does actually explicitly, she's quite a primitive woman, a primitive thinker that would have been a disgrace, because she submitted her, when she was accepted, I guess, to medical school or to do her post-grad as a psychiatrist. She explicit. This is how systemic this nonsense, this awfulness, this rot, this systemic rot is. She said she wants to deal. Her speciality will be where medicine intersects with race, gender, politics, sexuality, and class. And someone looked at this and thought, well, this looks very vigorous and a good thing. We should have a psychiatrist who wants to focus on those things. So that's where the institutions have gone. And in fact, and then she does, because she's such a primitive, atavistic moron, cretin, idiot. You know, she stands for the idiocracy. She says there. She mentions gratitude. She says, we are now in a psychological predicament because white people feel that we are bullying them when we bring up race. They feel that we should be thanking them for all they have done for us. And so gratitude in a very violently prone person or population inspires hate, absolute hate. And she's quite upfront about it.
Yeah, and this is the thing that we have talked about over the last number of conversations we've had. We had it here with Sasha Johnson in the UK.
Yes.
Plainly driven by hatred. There's no other word that you can use. But it just seems so weird that when that hatred is directed towards the Indigenous white community here in the UK and in the States, it's like liberals are happy about that. I mean, are they just nihilistic or stupid? What is it?
Well, when you say stuff, it's a topic for a book. The ladies, one of the ladies, at least you brought up there, was definitely one of those white progressive ladies. I guess she thinks that by thinking this way, she's excluded from any repercussions of her own thinking. She's not within the white paradigm she so hates. Why are they doing it? Well, what do you think? I mean, it's more than virtue signaling. It's deep intellectual and moral rot. These people, I think I brought the issue up as almost, you know, as I said, in 2015, and of course this thought was appropriated on Tucker Carlson. I'm so bitter. Just kidding. There's something almost erotic and sexual with their prostrating themselves to the other. You know, they almost get it's a moral high that they get, but it might be a little kinky. It's definitely morally and sexually kinky to me. But it's your guess. What do you think?
I mean, do you think it's some kind of embedded deep self-hatred? Do they hate themselves?
That's flattering. That's flattering the person who's being evil here. And I would.
There's evil as well. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. These women are evil. They're very confident. They're high achievers because of a corrupt system that has valued their lack of skill, their lack of intellect, their moral and intellectual ugliness. So they are trading. These are their. You know, this is their toolkit. This is their toolkit. To say, oh, shame, let's put you on the couch. Let's nurture your poor soul. These people have been pampered. They are narcissists. They are, no. So I wouldn't say it has to do with self-hate at all. I think it has to do with a loss of objectivity, a loss of intellectual rigor, and absolute rot. They see that by peddling, you know, I mean, we stand for Western civilization that gave us Shakespeare and Bach, you know, and what are they peddling? In fact, Charles Murray, in his magnificent book about human achievement, he said that in the last 50 or 70 years, while technological achievement is exponential, it's insanely, and it's magnificent, intellectual achievement is very slim compared to the centuries before that. And so these women, thanks to state support and institutional support, have managed to propel themselves to the top without being the top. So I think, no, they're not victims. They're on top of this pile of garbage. They're on top of the pile of garbage, and they're having a magnificent time. So,
But another aspect, Alana, that concerns me is, like, these people are professors, so I presume they are teaching, they are lecturing, they are. So younger minds than them, are being exposed to this toxic, as you say, toxic thinking. And that, surely then that just perpetuates and makes the thing even worse.
Yes, and I think last time during our last broadcast, we discussed that the children are especially white children. I think that was in our last broadcast. We discussed how they are the repository of all this hate. They are the victims of this critical race hate. And this is another issue that has not been brought up at all by all the conscientious objectors on Fox News and in the conservative media. They have not said, they've said, oh, it's bad for education. Our kids are really stupid. But it leaves white children incredibly vulnerable. And it sort of gives minority kids will soon be in a majority, but it gives better pigmented students a bounce in their step, maybe a little bit of aggression, maybe some of this knockout game fanfare that we're seeing everywhere. So it definitely is a horrible thing to do to children. And then, of course, you have the lost generation. If you are going to teach this sort of rather teach them Marxism, which at least, as I said in our last broadcast, is at least it is a rigorous intellectual discipline. Marxism, as written by Karl Marx, teach them that rather than critical race theory, which essentially is a way of reasoning backwards. It's that sort of if then a racial logical fallacy. If white, then evil. That's the basis of it. So we're going to have a lost generation, never to recover intellectually.
Yeah, but if the next generation is the future, then you've got more than a lost generation. You've got a lost future. It's even worse than that. And I mean, I can only imagine if you're a young person and these kind of people are providing you with tuition and direction and all of that. And even if you could think critically at that younger age, how could you do that? Because they've got control over you. They can determine your grades and determine your future and all this kind of stuff. So the whole system is rotten, isn't it, really, when you think about it?
Yep, absolutely. And, just to the final thought, I think I ended that this particular column about why hatred of whites is here. Yeah. Like South Africa, America is a creation of Northwestern European settlers. And it is in man's nature to dislike those who are unlike him, all the more so when they as a group have accomplished what he has not.
Yeah.
So that's the crux of it. And again, you and I referred not to, these are not only our thoughts, they were shared by an African-American journalist, Keith Richberg, in a wonderfully reasoned book, we said, it's for these achievements that whites are going to be hated. So,
but this is the thing, Alana, this is why, Into the Cannibals Pot is prophetic. It's a warning that America should be obviously paying attention to, so should the UK and indeed many other European countries as our civilizations.
Yes, what's happened with the banning of critical race in the UK? Because that's very important by government.
So it's like critical, in the UK, critical race hasn't permeated, despite the best efforts of certain academics, it hasn't permeated like it has in the UK, which is, so I think that's just the point we're at. Will that ban actually turn into something meaningful? Because be under no illusion, UK academia is a seething cauldron of leftism, like it really, really is. I look upon.
The main point is that this is comes out of American academia. It doesn't belong in England. You have better traditions to elevate. Yeah,
absolutely.
It doesn't belong in England.
Yeah, but the thing is that, you know, the thing is that America is such a pivotal location, and it does, whether we like it or not, and some people don't, it does transmit these things, Alana, and it transmits them especially into sort of European civilization, into European countries, into the UK. It really does, because the left in particular, they absorb it very easily.
America, in a sense, I think Tom Friedman meant it differently, but awful writer. You can really awful writer who writes in the New York Times. In fact, Tom Friedman, there are online, you can get opinion generators of his sort of column. You can plug in Tom Friedman column and you can just get it spat out at you. But in any case, he mentioned that there's the flattening of the world. But I look at it as America's flattened the world culturally, you know, whether it's been by exporting so much cultural products, not only democracy at the end of a bayonet, but America certainly, whether you view it as a strength or as a weakness, it has flattened the globe culturally. And you see everybody, even the Eurovision, they were all speaking American accents. You know, you can't. People say to me, "Don't you want to travel?" And I say, "Well, where can I find indigenous culture that doesn't have a McDonald's and a critical race theory department?" You know.
Well, I mean, it's interesting you say McDonald's. I can remember the time there was a lot of controversy about the fact that in France, that the French were resisting McDonald's. And this was seen to be, you know, a terrible thing. They were standing up for French cuisine, which is very good on the whole. And I can remember, maybe 15 years ago, being in Paris and going to the Louvre to because it's a massive place.
I've been there, yeah.
Yeah, it's lovely, amazing place.
Oh.
And honestly, Alana, there's a McDonald's just on the other side of the road to the end. I thought it was so sad. It saddened me no end. And it was busy. It was full of people, you know. So that was a surrender of France. Yeah. I wish the French had have, you know, stood by.
I don't think I'd go back to Paris, but I was there as well. I was there in the 1990s something, or maybe even earlier, and it was the Louvre. We spent a whole day there. It was magnificent, and we even found a little museum tucked away somewhere of all Picasso's art, and went to what's that famous department store to buy a little black dress? One of the famous department stores that every woman then used to go and buy a little black dress there. I had to have the knockoff, and there was an inkling of things to come, because someone at the main station, Le Garde, I can't remember what it was called, offered my husband, it was a North African, money for me. It wasn't much because I wasn't fat. So there was a hint. He said, would you sell her? Not so much because she's not big. So there was a hint of things to come.
Oh, well, isn't that the truth? Because obviously Paris was a city because, I mean, relatively speaking to me, it's an hour and 30 minutes of a flight. It's a short hip and a skip over across to Paris. I wouldn't go there now because Paris is not the Paris that you remember. It's not even the Paris I remember from 3 or 4 or 5 years ago. It's changed horribly. It's been disfigured. It's been culturally enriched. And it's awful. You know, it's really, really sad. And yet, you know, again, it's a repository for some of the highest, you know, sort of sort of peaks of our civilization. You mentioned the Louvre, there's all the galleries. There's so much to see and appreciate in Paris, just like London, actually. It's no different.
Yes.
But it's changed, Alana. It's not the same. And that's where it brings it sort of, if we, you know, we bring it back to what we've been talking about, the people who are now taking up dominance in some of these areas. They I think they hate the fact that all that culture is there. I mean, look at happened the the big cathedral that went up in flames mysteriously in Paris. I think it was Hillary Clinton went back past on a boat. Don't know if you remember that. Just as the Notre Dame burnt, Ms. Clinton was sailing by in a boat because it was in the background shot. But you know, all these. So it is. That's why I keep going on about and telling people they need to buy and read your book, because the writing is so obviously on the wall. You put the writing on the wall over a decade or so ago with the book, Alana. But you know, unfortunately and sadly, things are worse. They're not better. I don't see them getting better until we have the sort of honesty that I think, well, which we, you and I try to have with our viewers and listeners, and speak plainly so people can be equipped to understand exactly what's happening.
Yes, yes. And the liberal media is certainly mocking the preoccupation with critical race theory, which you and I have labeled clearly as not Marxism. It is anti-whitism. Yep. You know, it is not a class-based, it's not based on class envy. It's based on not even racial enmity, because critical race theorists, the idiocracy that runs the critical race production is exclusively focused on anti-whitism, on whites. And you know, I focused the debate on that here, and we've been very clear, and we've deconstructed the whole thing, and those are issues that are very important now, not to be sneezed at.
Yeah, because when people then see the witterings of the Dr. Arunas and these other people, they can then fully understand exactly what they're being told, and they need to understand it in the correct context, which is what in that most recent article, Alana, we talked about earlier in the show. You know, we're spelling it out the way it is, folks, and it's, you know, sometimes, yeah. I often think, Alana, that, you know, trying to talk harsh truths is harder than honeyed lies, but I'm not interested in honeyed lies. I want to speak truthfully and to explain to people honestly exactly what's happening. And you know, when we go from week to week in our conversations, and these stories just come along like that, you couldn't have written those that Dr. Aruna's comments, and then I'm the victim, and the media just think it's a bit problematical. That really bothered me, by the way. How can the media just think it's a bit tricky, this a bit problematical? It's a damn sight more than a bit problematical.
But this is the same sort of tack the conservative media will take, and that's where we have to elevate the debate to a different level of abstraction and point to the insidious nature of this thinking, to the inverted nature of standards in our institutions, to the institutional rot, to the institutionalized anti-whiteness. And maybe I'll wrap up now to say that from this column that was written in, out of Cannibal, Europeans are moreover particularly and uniquely vulnerable within this political dispensation, democracy, because of their history on the continents. The settlers in both continents, on the Americas and in Africa. Remedial historical revisionism notwithstanding, South Africa, and the same applies to the US, with its space program and skyscrapers, was not the product of the people currently dismantling it. Rather, it was the creation of British and Dutch settlers and their descendants. And in the case of America, very similarly, the product of Northwestern European settlers. And there you have it.
It's as simple as that. So look, everybody, I hope you've enjoyed that. I hope you've enjoyed the fact that we are trying to, sort of, as Alana said, raise the level of conversation and the level of insight. That's what we want to do. So, Alana, thank you very much for being with us this evening on the show. Great to see you. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Leave your comments in the threads below. And do make sure, as I say, you follow Alana on her Gab, on her Twitter, on her Parler. You can find me probably most places. So we'll leave it with you like that. And we look forward to catching up with you this time again next week. Good evening, everybody, and goodbye.